Welcome to Mindful School Marketing, your go-to podcast for personal and professional growth.
We're school marketers, business owners, and moms passionate about connecting other school professionals with tools and strategies for success.
We love solving problems, exploring new ideas, and thinking outside the box. Let's transform your school and life starting right now.
Welcome to Mindful School Marketing. I'm Tara Clays, owner of Design TLC, a school website agency based in Arlington, Virginia.
And I'm Aubrey Birch, CEO of Easy School Marketing, based in the Metro DC area. I help develop and execute effective marketing, development, and enrollment strategies. Today, surprise, we don't have a guest. We're changing things up and talking about school websites as a marketing tool and how to mindfully approach your school's websites. Both Tara and I help schools with their website strategy and content, so we thought it would be really helpful to talk about our experience and point out some useful tips and pitfalls schools encounter with their websites.
Absolutely. I'm excited for this conversation. A website is a front door to any business, and that's true for a school as well. In most cases, a school's website is the first impression that prospective families get of their school. Often, though, we see in what we do, budgets and time constraints, as we talk about on this podcast all the time, you know, people who do marketing for schools often wear many hats. And so time constraints, bandwidth, prevent school marketers from really mindfully approaching their website to make it accurately reflect the unique selling points of their school. So we thought it would be really helpful to go over some things that we know about websites and that we share and that we've seen to help schools as we approach the new year to be more mindful as they look at their website going forward. So let's start out. We're going to interview each other. So I'm going to ask Aubrey this question. So Aubrey, what are some common mistakes that you've seen schools make with their website, specifically with the content and messaging on their website?
Absolutely. So I too am really excited about this conversation. Tara is my go-to WordPress website person, but also in terms of what we do, I often am doing online brand visibility assessments where I'll go look at people's online presence and that includes their website. So having done like hundreds of these, a few things stuck out to me as these are just simple things that you don't think about, but truly impact the experience of a prospective family coming to look at your website. So the first thing I would say is when I land on a website, I actually need to know who you are, where you're located, and who you serve. For example, are you St. Joseph's in Minnesota or in Virginia? You serve kindergarten students or are you a K-8 or a K-12? These are really important things to have on your website so people shouldn't have to dig through to find them because then they can say, oh yes, this is for me so I can proceed with digging through this website now. Another thing that I notice is sometimes there's not a clear call to action. So people are visiting your site. Action do you want them to take? And are you consistent with that action? And is it clear? So sometimes those are things we notice. In addition, one of the many things that sometimes we forget about as in admissions is that our prospective families, they could be coming from public school. They might have actually no idea what the admissions process is. And so when they get to your admissions page, if your admissions page is full of text, heavy text, and not really a clear outline, step one, step two, step three, step four, of how to go through the admissions process, it can be very confusing. And when parents are confused, they can't take action. So we want to make it as simple as possible for them. And also in terms of like admissions, just if you are scheduling tours or there's a way to sign up for an event, try to think about it, making it as easy as possible for prospective families, whether it's they click a calendar link and they can schedule their tour that way. But just thinking of how busy these prospective families are and then making sure that whatever you're putting on the website makes it easy for them. So those are just a few of the things that I notice a lot when we're doing our online brand visibility assessments. Now, Tara, because you're the website guru and you build websites for schools, I'd love to know what are some important things to consider and maybe some current trends in school website design?
Yeah. So everything that you shared, I think a key thing that happens is people get inside their bubbles. And so what happens a lot of times with not just with schools, but with any business or organization, you know it well. And so you don't think that you need to put your address on there. You don't need to put your location on it because you know where you are. So one of the things to do is to have someone else who doesn't work for your school look at your website. It's a super easy thing to do. Ask your neighbor, ask a parent, ask your parents, ask your teenage children to go on the website and ask them to use it and see what they say. There are some free tools online, some user testing tools that you can use as well, but it's really easy to just have someone not involved with the school look at it, and they'll identify some of those things that you do in your assessments, Aubrey. So I think it's really important to get outside, to have somebody coming in from a bird's eye view, looking at your website for the content and messaging. And then from a design perspective, when you're building a website, refreshing a website, of course, images are really important. And we see a lot of schools also using video, a background video or a click to play video. We prefer a click to play a video just because a background video can really suck the resources out of your website and be very slow to load. It can be very cool looking, and in some cases it may fit the personality of your school to do that. We see a lot of prep schools, boarding schools using video because they have drone photography and it's compelling. But for a small independent school, a video might not actually be something that is going to make a difference in terms of how people perceive your school. You might be able to do it with a really awesome photo. So paying a lot of attention to images and making sure they're high quality is a really important and probably the most important part of a website design, because we all look at websites, right? And when you look at them, the first thing is a photograph, most likely. And if it's blurry or if it's not interesting, if it's a bunch of students in a classroom looking down at their notebooks, that's not really telling me very much. So paying a lot of attention to images is always like the top level thing that we think about when we're looking at web design. You mentioned call to action, and that is also a design element as much as it is also, you know, a very important funnel marketing step, and part of your strategy is outlining what your call to action or calls to action are. And the other thing about schools that from a content and design perspective that sometimes is a challenge is that you really have two audiences coming using your website. You have your prospective families who want to know about your school, who want to inquire, set up a tour, fill out an application, that type of thing. And then you have your current families who already know what you're about, who already have bought into being part of your school, but there's information on your website that you're offering to them as well. So that's why a lot of times from a design perspective on a school website, you'll see at the top of a website, which we call the header, you'll have navigation or a menu that is divided into two sections. So you'll highlight a parent's corner or a parent portal link that serves your families who are already enrolled and gives them information on paying tuition and calendar and forms they need to fill out and that type of thing. And then you also have navigation that is more general about your school for prospective families. And I would say for the most part, most schools are focusing and should be focusing on their prospective families with their website, because current families they're not coming to the site to be sold. They're coming there to get information, and there are many ways to send that to them. But you really want to make sure, again, that your website is presenting your school's personality. So whether those parent portal or the apply buttons, those kinds of calls to action are separate from each other or in the same section. We've seen now a trend where oftentimes they were at the top in a quick link section at the top. Now I'm seeing them all fixed to the side. So you'll see apply and inquire on the side, or calendar. Those kind of quick link buttons are now being presented on the side, usually on the right-hand side of the top section of a website. So that's a design trend that we're seeing. And the other thing that we see in design, which is also messaging related, is some statistics. So whether it's called quick facts or at a glance, or there's some kind of infographic that shows some compelling information about your school that sets you apart from other schools, or it's important information that parents want to know, specifically student to teacher ratio. That's really important information. Maybe how many classes per grade you have. A lot of times people are coming to a private school because they want a small environment. So highlighting those features that make your school different and that are benefits that you know from interviewing your parents and those types of things that you know are important to them. So presenting those in a visual way with some kind of very quick at a glance statistics is also something that we see as a trend in school website design.
I love those, by the way. Yeah. I absolutely love those quick infographics, because if you think of people's attention span, when they're on a website, sometimes just giving them like the little glimpse of what the school has to offer in those infographics or however they're presented, I think they can be a powerful tool.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll mention that we've done on the past few websites that we've built for schools is to have some kind of a compelling testimonial or story. Some schools actually will do a whole feature on some alumni or some parents or faculty, and you present that on the homepage, and then you can click to it to get more detailed information. But having those stories or features of people who are part of the school really gives people a flavor for the community. And also when it comes to especially schools that have high school enrollment, to see where students are going afterward and what they're doing with their lives or where they're going to college. So having those types of features, I know as parents, we want to send our children to a school where they're going to be successful after they're done with the school. So what kind of development do they do in making your kids aspire to be good people and also to go on to advanced education in college and have an exciting future? So those types of stories can also be really compelling. And that's something we see presented on the homepage and also within content within a website. So there's basic design things that we see right now, some of which are not necessarily new, but they may be presented in a new way. Something that's not part of a school website necessarily, but that certainly is connected to it and that leads to it, that I wanted to ask you about, because it's a marketing thing as well, is Google My Business. And I know Google My Business can be confounding and confusing, and yet it is really essential in terms of a marketing plan for a school, because it has such a huge impact on what people see. If people don't know what Google My Business is, you could talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind, and sharing some advice about a Google My Business and how to use it for a school.
Absolutely. And I know Google My Business very well as well. But Google My Business is one of those tools that I don't think as many schools are embracing. I think they spend more time on social media than they do thinking about their Google My Business profile, which is fine. Social media is important too. But Google My Business is this free tool basically that you have at your disposal that is so important. And a lot of schools, when we're doing online brand visibility assessments, haven't even claimed their profile, even though it's free. Yet, if you think about how parents search and how many people use Google to search, your school's Google My Business profile is one of the first things they see and what it entails. So if it says it's unclaimed and there's some random picture of the parking lot of your school, and that's not the first impression you want parents to have of your school. So I think we were just talking about social proof, and Google My Business is really cool because it offers your parents a way to give reviews, which is social proof. And that's what parents, prospective families, are really looking for. Like, what is the real story behind the school? What are parents really saying about the school? So Google My Business gives your school the opportunity to strategically ask parents to write honest reviews. We'd always want to say honest reviews, right? That will help your school really stand out in your Google My Business profile. Other features of Google My Business, there's a place to put events. So if you have admissions events coming up, if you have community events, there's wonderful places to put that. You can upload video and photos. You really just want to think about your Google My Business profile as something that you have in your marketing rotation. So you're strategically thinking about, okay, every month I'm going to post to Google My Business on this day. These are the key posts and here's the upcoming events that are happening. And just thinking about it as something that's part of your marketing strategy. And it is very helpful in both people finding your school and then learning more about your school. So really, it doesn't have to be a huge time investment, but it is something that is very important. So I definitely encourage everyone to just set aside 30 minutes. It really doesn't take that long to do a good update of your Google My Business profile. Do you have anything to add, Terrace?
I've written a couple of blog posts about it because it is very confusing, even how to get to it. It's connected to Google Maps, actually. So if you were to go on a map and put in an address or put in the name of a school, you'll see on the side oftentimes there will be a listing, a little box that shows up on, I think it's on the left-hand side. It might be on the right now if it changes. So even getting to it, you have to log in with a Google account and you can claim it. So if you put your name, your school name into Google Maps, and you see something pop up on the side and it's not accurate, or it says claim my business, then you can follow those steps to do that. And they'll send a postcard to verify that you are who you are. And then you can start really editing it. Any user can contribute to your profile. They can suggest a change and Google will look at that. So you want to really make sure that you check it and that you claim it, like you said, if you don't already have it. But checking it really is a hard thing to do if you don't know how to get there. So go to Google Maps and look it up there. And then reviews, we all focus on reviews in everything. I just took a trip. Everything we did on our trip, I was looking for reviews. So it's really important to pay attention to Google My Business and see what people are saying. You can invite people to review you. You can invite your families to review you. There were people, oftentimes people are motivated by discontent, right? So if people are not happy, that you don't have to let them know, they're going to find it and they're going to leave you a review that might not be accurate. It might not be flattering. It might not be positive. And what you do with that, as well as positive reviews, is respond to them. So when you've claimed your Google My Business listing, you have the opportunity to communicate with people who review you and respond. And that shows that you're engaged. So we always recommend that people do that too. I know you recommend and you help schools with those responses because it can be tricky sometimes to respond to somebody saying something negative that may not even be true. That's really painful to go through that process.
For sure. And I love the book, Hug Your Haters, because it does give some tips on that. I do think it's important to both acknowledge the great reviews and the ones that you're like, this isn't true. And you just want to wipe it out, but no, you actually have to respond to it. And monitoring that is really important, like you mentioned, because especially around admission season, you don't want some negative reviews popping up right during your admission season. And you're like, why are people asking about our bullying? And then you're like, oh, because some person was very unhappy and wrote about bullying on our Google My Business review. So let's shift some gears. So I have a question for you about some technical things. If you could think about some technical things that schools might not be aware of when they're building or refreshing their website.
Yeah, I love talking about the technical stuff and the design. So we do all of it, but the technical stuff is people aren't aware of it. And you can make some really big mistakes without even realizing that you've made them. And I talk about SEO a lot because that's the search engine optimization, which is related in a way to Google My Business because it's Google focused. But having content on your website, Google does what's called indexing. They have bots that crawl the internet and they crawl all the pages of your website and they index them. They make like their own little directory. So then that comes up in a search. So if you have a page that's about like K-8 education, the benefits of that, that might show up under your website. Sometimes you see sub pages that show up. So it will index those pages. And sometimes schools will do a website refresh and they'll hire someone or they'll do it themselves and they don't do it correctly. And so they'll say, we don't need that page anymore, or we're going to change the name of that page or change the URL of that page. And sometimes what happens then is that the page is gone and Google is looking for it. And Google does not like that. Your site could be penalized for this. And it's a very bad user experience because maybe someone has saved that link, or maybe it's been put into some kind of aggregate site like niche.com or something like that has tagged that page and people click on it and they get an error. So doing what's called a redirect is a really important technical thing. Connecting your site to Google Analytics and Google Search Console is also something that's technical and can be very confusing and tricky. And so I'll see a lot of schools getting confused on how to do that and how to use Google Analytics and Google Search Console and why you would use it. Why do you use Google Analytics? You want to see what your website traffic is doing. You want to see if it's going up or down in response to marketing efforts. If you are not doing anything at all, if you're not doing any marketing, no email, no social media, nothing, you might not really need Google Analytics because your website traffic is what it is. But if you're actually making some efforts to try to increase your traffic to your website, then you should be using Google Analytics to track that. So those are a couple of technical things. Other things which are also related to design are things that affect the speed, the load speed of your site. And this also can impact Google's favorability rating of your site. If it's too slow to load, you're going to get knocked down in search results. So making sure that you're checking to make sure that your site is optimized, that your images that you put on your site are not 2 megabyte pictures that you've taken off your phone and uploaded to your site, but that they are being optimized in some way and cropped. Having video on your server that's taking up a lot of resources can cause the site to be too slow to load. So those are some mistakes that we often see also. We use WordPress, which is a content management system. It's basically software that's used to build a website. And it is the largest software platform in the world, which is great because it can do a lot of different things. You can also choose where you're hosting your website in that case. So if you're using Squarespace or Final Site or some kind of proprietary system, they will manage that for you. And they're really good at that. So they can manage that for you, but you're also kind of stuck with whatever they offer. If you're using a content management system, you can choose different hosts, and that can also have a big impact on the load speed of your website. Load speed is something that's really important as well. So those are the basic technical things that we cover that are going to impact the performance and user experience. So having a rat's nest of pages and old pages that you're not using anymore, that's something that we don't really like to see, but it's not necessarily going to impact your user experience. So just focusing on the things that impact user experience. The last thing I'll say are sliders. They were very popular for a long time. And then people started doing research into website sliders. And by sliders, there's a message and a picture, and it says, here's benefit one of our school. And then there's another slider. Here's a benefit two of our school. Here's benefit five of our school. People never got to even slide number three. And so now you're not seeing sliders as much because we know that people don't sit there and click and click and click to watch them. So we try to present those five benefits in a way that they can do it while they're scrolling, rather than having to take action to watch, sit there and watch a slide scroll from one slide to the next. So those are the technical things that we see, that we focus on.
I love that, by the way. And those are the things that as schools, you don't even think about. And if you've had your website has transitioned, like a lot of times in small schools, it was like Betty did the website and then Betty left. And then Jenny took over the website, and there's not been like this cohesive experience from website handoff. And so I think a lot of these things get lost, like the Google Analytics, how they redirect the pages and stuff like that.
Jenny, yeah. One more technical thing I'll mention is broken links. And I mentioned before that people sometimes will delete a page and then it becomes broken, but you also may have some old links on your site that are linking to other websites that are or maybe there was an article in your local newspaper 10 years ago that you have linked somewhere and they've taken that down. So there's a free tool. There are several free tools. If you just Google broken link checker, you can put your website in and it will give you a list of broken links on your website that you can go in and fix, because Google will also not be happy with your website if it has a lot of broken links on it. So those are some things you can check.
By the way, that's awesome. I love when you give me websites where I can check like my website or like the little tools that you always tell me about. And I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. Thank you.
There are some great tools.
Shifting gears, this has been a fantastic conversation thus far. I hope our listeners have really gotten a lot out of this. Usually when we have guests on, we wrap it up with some rapid fire questions. So yes. I thought today we might dive into some that maybe would help our guests get to know us a little bit and maybe beneficial to them.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know, if I can kick us off, what are you reading right now, Tara?
Yeah, I'm excited about this because you and I haven't chatted for a bit. And so hearing what's up with you is fun. We can do this live on air here. So I just got back from a vacation. And so I did fun, like novel reading. And I just finished a book called The Heart's Invisible Furies by John Boyne, which takes place in Ireland. If you are a fan of John Irving's writing style, I found it really similar to his. So I really enjoyed reading a book for fun, just a fiction book. It was really nice to do. And now I'm starting another novel, but this is a historical fiction novel called The Personal Librarian by Marie Benedict. And then I've been reading for a while, a book called Essentialism by Greg McKeown. And that is like a productivity mindset business type of book, telling you how to say no to things and prioritize what's important.
So funny that you listed that as your last book that you're also reading, is that I'm reading his most recent book, Effortless, which I find very, very inspiring. Like, I'm always inspired to do less, but do more of the more important things. And I feel like his next book was really, it was very helpful to me. So I'm enjoying that. And Adam Grant's Think Again is also one I'm reading. And I'm so impressed that you're reading some fiction too. That will be one of my goals, is to incorporate a little more fiction, because I've been on like this whole business / marketing / self-development / parenting book cycle for quite some time. So I will put that as my 2022.
Yeah, it's nice to disconnect a little bit and instead of looking at social media. My problem is that some of my books are on my iPad with the Kindle app. And my iPad also has Instagram and everything on it. So I often will get distracted, which is not good. But, and I love Adam Grant. He's got a great podcast and he's often a guest on podcasts. I think he has such great things to share and his perspective. So I enjoy him too. All right, let's see. The next question we're going to ask each other is, what's your favorite productivity tool or tip right now?
Okay, so you're going to have way more than I do because
oh, no, I won't.
You are such a productivity, I feel like, genius. You've got it all down. But I guess from our, when we talked about this, I think on our first podcast or something, I guess for me, the productivity, it's not really a tool, but it's something I'm trying out right now. It's called Focus Booster. It's just time tracking. And I'm trying to be more aware of like where I'm spending my time and what's the direct result of that. And just being more mindful about where I'm putting my time and energy and the outcomes. One of the ESM team members, Chelsea, turned me onto it. So I am trying it out and I'll report back. But so far, I think it's really helped keep me on task even more because it's in 25-minute increments.
Is it an app that you've installed that tracks what you're doing, or you have to manually tell it what you're doing?
So I'm sure it does a lot of things. I just have it on my desktop and I just click, like, it's like you type in the name. For me, it would be like a client name or like a project right. I'm working on. And then I just click and it starts at 25 and then it does like a little alarm when it goes off, which always startles me.
Yeah. It's not enough time for me. 25 minutes. It's not enough. Yeah.
But sometimes I find if I'm doing a task that maybe I've been procrastinating a bit on, it is good to say, I only have to do this for 25 minutes. So that's nice. That's now true. I want to hear your productivity.
Yeah. Tips. So I have tried the time tracking. I use Toggle. I use it with my team. So they use it because they get paid by the hour. So they are motivated to use the tracker. We use Toggle, T-O-G-L. It connects to lots of things. Like it connects to Gmail and a lot of different tools that I use. So I can actually like start the timer there when I think of it, which I often don't. So I also use Rescue Time, which actually looks at what I'm doing without me having to tell it what I'm doing. And then I can go and download. So it'll, if I'm on a certain website for 4 hours, it will, I can download that and I can import it into Toggle and assess how much time it's taken me to do certain things. So I'm really bad at tracking my time and I have written about it and I have tried and I have tried and I have tried and I'll go a few days being really good and then I'll stop. Good for you for doing that because I think it's really a challenge. But interestingly, one of the things that I have been doing, which is a, it's a tip, it's not really a tool, is that every week on Tuesday at 2 o'clock, I have a focus session and I've invited some colleagues to go to join if they want to. And so it's just a Zoom link and we meet at 2 o'clock and we say just for a minute or two, we just say what we're going to work on during that hour. And then we shut off our sound and shut off our camera and we work on that one thing, maybe work-related thing. Maybe it's I'm going to do some personal writing or whatever it's going to be, but you set that 1 hour of time to do that one thing. Like you were saying with your 25 minutes, this is an hour-ish. And it's really helpful to do that, what they call eat the frog, right? Getting that thing that you haven't wanted to do done. That's been something that I've implemented for the past couple of months. And it's been really helpful to knock off the thing that I've been procrastinating on.
I love it because it's holding you accountable because everyone knows that you're supposed to be doing this and you've set aside the time.
So yes.
Fantastic. Shifting gears. I'd love to know, what is your go-to morning routine?
So I have a dog, so I have to walk the dog at some point in the morning. I'm a morning exerciser. So Tuesdays and Thursdays, I meet up with a running group early at 5:45 and run and then come back and walk the dog and shower and get dressed and have coffee. I've been doing some fasting, some intermittent fasting. So usually it used to be that my favorite thing about the morning was having oatmeal or an English muffin with peanut butter on it, but I don't do that right now until midday. I've skipped over that and it is a challenge some days, but I'll say in preparation for my morning routine, at the end of my day, I have a planner and I write down what is coming the next day so that I know if I have a 9 o'clock or an 8 o'clock or whatever meeting that I need to be ready for or whatever else is happening that day. And I write down the like 3 things that I want to accomplish in the day. So that's not really my morning routine, but it's preparation for the morning.
I think that's so key because you, in order to have a successful morning, you actually need to know what your day looks like and what's on tap. So for me, for my morning routine, coffee is essential to my wake up routine. I have not yet figured out how to get off of that, but I'm quite enjoying it. And then I sit down and I'll do a journal or affirmations, a meditation. I review the day ahead. I do that at the end of the day and the beginning of the day just to, you know, say, okay, this is what I'm doing. And then I'll do HIIT or weights and then an outdoor walk. But let me just be realistic here. That's like my dream. And it happens like maybe 3 out of the 7 days. And then sometimes you just have to go with, okay, maybe it's just the walk today. The kids right. didn't sleep. Someone had a nightmare. So it's just going to be the walk, but something in the morning, I think to do something is very important. So those really set me up for success. Like I want to have energy for the day. I want to be there for my clients. I want to get things done. And the morning routine is essential for me for that.
Yeah. And you have little kids who are in school. I'm an empty nester. So it's a little bit different. It's in some ways it's harder when you have, when you don't have those things that you have to do, because I can easily say, I don't have to get up and do this. I don't have to take my kids to school at 7 a.m. I could get up at 7, but I still get up early. And I think for me, waking up early, it really makes the day feel much better for me. Yeah,
absolutely. I totally get that. Thank you everyone for joining us on the podcast today. Please go to mindfulschoolmarketing.com and sign up for updates when we publish a new episode. And you can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And we'd also love if you would leave a review on Apple.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. This is our last episode of 2021. We look forward to reconnecting with you in the next year.
Absolutely. And we're cheering you on. Take care.
Thanks for joining us on the Mindful School Marketing Podcast.
We'd love it if you pop into iTunes and leave a review, 5-star preferred. Let us know how you like the show. It helps us improve what we're doing and helps others find us too.